You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
Why keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro?
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, just me. Just me and the fiscal cliff. Just me and a Republican Party trying to rebrand itself. But they can't run from who they really are. Do the words acorn mean anything to you? Or Death Star? Or voting against a treaty on the UN Convention on Rights for Disabled People? Meanwhile, Dick Armey, Freedom Works. Freedom Works is just another way of saying, got nothing left to scam. Mitt Romney has finally come out with his continuation of public service in the private sector. And not for public service. All that and more we will get, I promise. Well, I'm not going to promise too much, but to this. What the?
Mom! Mom! Why did you do that to me?
We will get to that story. I've been teasing that now for a week. Let's start off with just a brief good news. Maybe you saw this, but it has been reported today by, well, HuffPost, that Elizabeth Warren will be appointed to the Senate Banking Committee. Incoming senator will be tapped to serve on the Banking Committee. This is according to four sources familiar with the situation. Big victory for progressives, not only her win in Massachusetts, and I was just actually up in Massachusetts, giving a talk, but also a big victory for those progressive groups that have been agitating for her appointment there. Of course, she has a greater influence over regulators and the banking industry in general. Sitting upon that Senate committee, and of course, Democrats in control of the Senate, so that committee, being a Democrat on that Senate, on that panel, that committee, as it were, has a little bit more power than it would if you were in the minority. And speaking of banking, Citigroup has laid off 11,000 employees. Cutting 11,000 jobs worldwide, about 4% of its staff, to save as much as $1.1 billion a year in expenses. That place is in disarray, I think. I've known some folks who have been who worked over there back in the day, and they're just like, they got out of there as quick as they could. moving on. Update on the so-called fiscal cliff, the chances of a grand bargain. The whatever you want to call it, the fiscal slope, the austerity bond, everybody's got a different name for this. But the important thing is how the Republicans are feeling these days. And one of the factors that is playing in this this little dance that we're seeing comes out in a Pew poll on the fiscal cliff attitudes of the population from November 29th to December 2nd. Poll question, how well do you feel you understand what would happen if these automatic spending cuts and tax increases were to go in effect in January? 28% fairly well, very well. 28%, 29% fairly well. 22% not too well. 19% not too well at all. Now, as I was going to this talk, I was going to talk a little bit about the election, about the fiscal cliff, and I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine who I got to give me a ride, basically because I needed to write the speech. And we were talking about the fiscal cliff, and I said, you realize that all of the things that we are afraid of, or that supposedly people are afraid of with the so-called fiscal cliff, will function to shrink the deficit. Now, you know, I spend my time immersed in this stuff. I spend my time talking to people who are immersed in this stuff. To the extent that I get feedback from you, the audience, it is people who are very well immersed in this debate. But most people out there think that the reason why our economy crashed was because of our debt and deficit, and that the fiscal cliff in somehow is tied into this notion. You know, I've said this many times before. You probably all have heard this, but I want to emphasize it because when I brought this up at this this speech I gave up in Massachusetts, I think half the room were completely shocked. But the fact is that just about everything that we're talking about, increased taxes, the ending of unemployment benefits or extended unemployment benefits, the ending of the Social Security tax holiday, the automatic cuts that will take place as a function of that debt ceiling deal from a year and a half ago. All of these things will do one thing, and that will shrink the deficit. And the reason why economists and everyone is biting their nails about this to the extent that they are, it's because these people know that if you shrink a deficit at a time of weak economic growth, in other words, if you impose austerity, it will hurt the economy. And when you lay it out to people, like, you know, we have more taxes, we have more revenue coming in, we cut spending, at least in the short term, it's going to decrease the deficit. And then ultimately, as the economy sputters, the deficit then would grow again because revenues would drop because the economy is going bad. People are paying less taxes because they're making less money. But initially, it's going to shrink the deficit. Well, people understand math. It's just that it's never laid out for them in that very simple and obvious way. And so I would even guess that those people who think that they very well or fairly well know what the implications of the fiscal cliff, I would say at least half of them are wrong. They don't know. And so with that backdrop, one of the things that's coming out is that President Obama, and we've talked about his proposal, and he has in some ways entrenched his position even more since last week, where he is just not giving any ground, at least in terms of increasing taxes on the top 2%. Now, we know that in terms of impacting the economy, increasing taxes on the top 2% has very little implications for the economy. Virtually nil. It's the old, a rich guy buys one loaf of bread at a time. And the Congressional Research Service, Moody's Analytics, have both come out with reports that say when you increase taxes on people who are making over $250,000, when you increase taxes on each dollar above $250,000, not the money that they, the first 250 grand that they make, it has very little implications because they're not going to change their buying habits one way or another. They're not going to change their hiring habits, their buying habits. It's not going to have any impact on their lives in terms of it impacting the economy, and probably not on their lives. If you're making $1 million a year and you've got to pay another $20,000 in taxes or whatever it is, 3% on that every dollar above the $750,000, you're not going to say, well, we're not going to get that house. I'm not going to buy that other car. I was going to if I had that extra 20. No, you're just not going to buy as much stocks. You're not going to still hide more money away in the Caymans, whatever it is. You're simply not going to impact the economy in that way. And the one sort of, it's still floating around out there. But we talked about Tom Cole, who had said, you know, we've got to sort of give in on this. The idea that the Republicans had maybe as a fallback position was, we'll take that hit on the marginal increase in the marginal rates, but maybe we can keep the capital gains at 15% as opposed to it automatically going back up to 20%. Maybe we can keep the carried interest loophole so that if I'm a hedge fund guy and I'm making $20 million a year because I'm gambling with other people's money, that's not really investing. That's just, that's the way I get paid. And it's unclear whether or not that's going to happen at this point. But what is clear is that President Obama is taking a position that is more aligned with Democrats in the House, or at least some Democrats. And part of that reason, I think, is because Nancy Pelosi is being very aggressive in pushing this, and she does not seem to be backing down. And it's very hard to know what's going on in the White House, whether they're going, you know, Nancy Pelosi has sort of boxed us in some respects. But right now she's continuing on her attempt. And much of this is also about the elections are going to be taking place in two years from now, forcing the Republicans into a box where they are rejecting middle class tax cuts in favor of, or drawing the line as leverage for tax cuts for millionaires. And so Nancy Pelosi is attempting to force a vote on the package that's already been passed in the Senate 4 months ago now, 5 months ago, basically providing a preemptive tax cut for the middle class. Because we know that all the tax, the Bush tax cuts are going to sunset come January. She now has, I believe, about 154 signatures on this discharge petition, which essentially forces a vote, even though Boehner doesn't want one. They need 218 members, which means that they need, I don't know, about 30 to 50 from the Republicans. Maybe it's closer to like 25 or something. They won't get it. But what it will do is it will make a lot of Republicans sweat. Because at one point in the next election cycle, one of the ads you will see is, hey, Republican Congressman Jim Stevenberg, he would, I don't know who that guy is. He's one of the few, refused to allow for a vote on a middle-class tax cut. And so even if this guy ends up, even if the middle-class tax cuts end up going through, even if he takes the vote later, he's still going to be on record as having refused that discharge petition. We got a link up, Credo, which is continually impresses me with the positions they take. They have a petition list and they're sending out email blasts. And this is not something that helps you build a list, as far as I can tell. This insider baseball stuff. So they are really pushing to get more and more, because the closer they get to that number of 218, the more pressure it puts on these members of Congress. And Pelosi is going, she's getting very aggressive with this. And there is some sense now that the Republicans, like I say, may capitulate on these tax increases now, or I should say these tax cuts for middle class, and just allow the tax cuts to sunset on the top 2%. Story out today, I think in the New York Times by Wiseman. Senior leaner, Republican leadership aides say they are contemplating a fallback position. Since a standoff on expiring tax rates will be portrayed by Democrats as evidence that the opposition is willing to allow taxes rise on middle class to keep taxes from rising on the rich. And right now, 53% of Americans say that if we go over the fiscal cliff, it's going to be Republicans' fault. Some 20-some-odd percent think it's Obama's fault. Democrats in Congress, they don't control anything. The leadership officials now say that if no deal can be struck to avert automatic expiration of all Bush-era tax cuts and the onset of deep across-the-board spending cuts, they could foresee taking up and passing legislation this month to extend the tax cuts for the middle class. This is what Pelosi is pushing. And resume the fight over spending and taxes as the nation approaches the next hard deadline, its statutory borrowing limit. So in other words, the Republicans realize that right now they have no leverage. They will take the hit on the expiration of these tax cuts for millionaires, and then they will move into the next round where they will take basically take the country's credit rating hostage again. It worked so well for them last time, they're going to try it again. Now, the question is, can they actually even get there? Can they even get to the point where they will punt and basically retreat to a position where they have more leverage? A strategic retreat, if you will. The only thing that seems to be helping them right now are people like Steny Hoyer, who is the majority whip. And this is why when we got the news that Nancy Pelosi was going to continue to be the minority leader for the Democrats, I was so excited about this. Because we now have a situation where Steny Hoyer is saying the following, and this is how they do, ladies and gentlemen. And by they, I'm talking about the Steny Hoyers. I'm talking about the Donahue Peebles. Hoyer, this is according to, I think, The Hill. Am I looking at The Hill? Is that what it is? The Democratic whip warned that taking entitlement benefits off the table is a bad place to start negotiations. What?
Hey, what happened?
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened. The corporatists said, uh-oh. Now understand, in the same way that Donahue Peebles would talk about the political realities, right, and blame others, or at least hang a position on others that he actually holds, but will not argue the merits of, right? That's what I walked you through on that appearance that I had with Chris Hayes. He would shift from arguing the merits of a position to saying, well, that's the political reality because others are supporting it. And then would not engage in the argument on merits. Steny Hoyer is doing the same thing right here. He's not saying, I want to cut entitlement benefits. I want to cut social insurance. It's just that they want to so badly that it would be a mistake not to include it in negotiations. And anybody who's been involved in negotiations knows that is exactly, if you want your outcome to be no cuts to social insurance, you don't say it's legitimate that it's on the table. You don't say we're going to concede this up front that it is really there is some validity to this argument. Hoyer said GOP proposals, right? Not Hoyer's proposals, but GOP proposals to raise Medicare eligibility age, make wealthier seniors pay higher Medicare rates. Again, there it is, means testing, right? Which we discussed the other day. And limit the cost of living increases for some federal programs. That would be Social Security. Now, you can dress it up any way you want. What he's talking about is partially privatizing Medicare, because those people who would be subject to an increase in eligibility age are going to have to go out into the private market and they're going to have to buy insurance. Never mind the fact that it doesn't actually save any money. In fact, it probably ends up costing more money, not only for those individuals, well, definitely for those individuals, but ultimately for the government, because we know the private insurance industry doesn't contain costs like Medicare, certainly not Medicaid. Even as he warned that he might not support them. So I may not support these positions, but I do think it's got to be on the table. They clearly are on the table, Hoyer said of the Medicare changes during his weekly press briefing in the Capitol. They were on the table in the Boehner-Obama talks. You see this? He's now taking the position that Boehner is saying that President Obama in secret negotiations with me already agreed to this in 2011. That does not mean that I'd be prepared to adopt them now, but they're clearly, I think, on the table. This is how they do. You know, this is the functional equivalent of Mila coming to me and saying, hey, can I have another piece of candy today? No, your mom is against it. I mean, if it was up to me, I may or may not be against it, but your mom is against it, so... what are you going to do? Hoyer said the GOP's proposal to reduce the cost of living increases to certain federal programs, the so-called chain consumer price index, should also be considered as part of the fiscal cliff talks. So just, you know, understand what's going on here. Pelosi's going one way. Steny Hoyer's going another. And Steny Hoyer is not claiming that he's going away. He's just saying we need to have respect. And we really need to negotiate this because they seem to be really adamant about it. Not me. Not me. And talk about throwing a life vest. Boehner now comes out with a proposal that no one takes seriously. Now, I wanted to say this. You got to take this with a grain of salt. The White House rejected Boehner's proposal because there was nothing there. And even guys like Josh Barrow, who is one of those, conservative libertarian leaning types, who at the very least, I think, is fairly honest in his analysis, says there's nothing here. I mean, literally, there's nothing here. There's a couple of numbers that don't seem to be referenced to anything. But at the same time, he's also being attacked, Boehner, by the Tea Parties, the Tea Partiers and the Heritage Foundation and the Grover Norquist and members of his own caucus. Now, again, one of the things that they like to do, and this happened during the debt ceiling negotiation, was that Boehner is just, you know, he's caught in the middle. He's trying to do the right thing, but he can't control his caucus. You got to feel bad for him. He's really actually, he seems almost like a real partner in peace. And part of that kabuki, Boehner knocks off a couple conservative members of some influential committees that deal with supposedly budget talks. Now, I really find it hard to believe at this point, when I see something like this, and I hear Rush Limbaugh talking about it, well, this is the way that you consolidate power. So it's absolutely, you know, he's not judging it. He's not saying like, Boehner, we got to take this guy down. It's just like, this is the way power does. You know, when Limbaugh talks process like that, when he says like, oh, well, they've... the Republicans have to say this because they have to, because of the liberal media. They have to project that they're, this is all politics. When you hear something like that, it makes me believe that this is part of what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it like Boehner is just, he's trying to get as fair a deal as he can with the president. He's trying to be reasonable here. Because I think Boehner's situation is far too precarious as majority leader to get away with this unless he had gotten the sign off. David Schweikart of Arizona and Walter B. Jones of North Carolina were booted from the Financial Services Committee. Now, Walter Jones was one of those guys who came out against the Iraq War fairly early, still a conservative nutjob in many ways, but there may be enough problems with him in the caucus that people were like, yeah, go ahead. Justin Amash of Michigan and Tim Hulskamp of Kansas were removed from the Budget Committee. Hulskamp lost his place on the Agriculture Committee as well. That also seems like a trade-off. We don't want to cut those big ag subsidies. You want good things in Congress and to have a good career? Better play along nicely, the GOP aide said, characterizing the message behind the moves. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. So this is the state of play right now. Take all of this with a certain grain of salt. Because one can't really get a grip on what's going on there. We do know, I think, to the extent that President Obama has been emboldened, I suppose it's possible he's had just a radical change of heart. But I also think, and this is something that, again, I think I was saying a year and a half ago, my Friday talks with Cliff, that I think that President Obama is going to find that he's a little bit more lonely if he wins re-election. That the Democrats in the House are going to be thinking about 2014 and are not going to be as concerned with his concerns. And so we'll see how this plays out. But we clearly want this to go. We clearly want the Bush tax cuts to expire on their own. There's far more leverage there. And then you have to work on the debt ceiling. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Republican ongoing attempts to rebrand themselves and why it's such bullshit. Oh, can I say that? All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. So you have now just an incredible amount of delusion on the Republican side. And it's quite helpful at this point. Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, I guess, gave speeches that were about as innocuous as you could get at this point. Marco Rubio, just days after saying, like, we really don't know. Like, I'm not a scientist, man. I don't know how old the planet is. I don't. It could be 6 weeks. Could be not a million years, but could be six, seven thousand. But you have here the two potential front runners for the 2016 Republican, I guess, sweepstakes, as it were, trying to set markers of reasonableness. And it's virtually impossible for them to do. We can hear, and I keep saying this over and over again, and I will continue to say it, the Washington Republicans can attempt, at least on some level, the somewhat national Republicans can attempt to say that we've gotten much more reasonable. Sean Hannity can talk about immigration reform all he wants. The problem is you still have guys like Grover Norquist going out there, and despite the fact that the polling shows that the majority of Americans will blame the Republicans if we go over the fiscal cliff, even though they don't know what the fiscal cliff is. And Grover Norquist going on MSNBC, I think he's probably doing this just to get hits of his YouTube channel. But this is what he had to say about President Obama. First, he played a little music, and then he did this.
Part of that reasonableness is actually putting revenue on the table, which Speaker Boehner has said multiple times he is open to doing. That includes closing loopholes and ending deductions. These are not words that are political kryptonite, apparently, for the Republican Party. That has stoked the ire of some on the sort of the ends of the conservative spectrum, including Eric Erickson. They have said that this is the GOP selling out. Do you agree with that or not?
Not at this point. We were in exactly this point 2 years ago when the same things were discussed with Obama during the debt ceiling increase. And at the end of the day, we ended up with $2.5 trillion in spending savings and not a dollar of tax increase. Why? Because Obama overplayed his hand. He's doing it again, just as he did in 2008. He thought the country had given him a blank sheet of paper to work on. He did the stimulus spending. He went from 70% support down to below 50. He lost the House. Now he gets reelected with less strength, not against a war hero, but against a guy from Massachusetts. And the Republicans have the House, and he thinks somebody made him king, and he's going to have more taxes, more spending, and more regulations. It's a real problem for him. He doesn't have the mandate he thinks he does. So I think he takes us over the cliff because he's got blinders on. He doesn't see where he stands in the universe.
Okay.
Yes. In other words, Grover Norquist saying this guy thinks he's king. He's extremely uppity in some respects. Despite all the polling, despite the fact that Grover Norquist now is in many respects just a burning tire hanging around the necks of a lot of these Republicans looking to run for re-election 2 years from now. And so, again, you know, Norquist there, though, is signaling where he knows the Republicans have their only leverage. And their only leverage at this point, unless President Obama basically decides to use his constitutional ability to bypass the debt ceiling vote, essentially, in Congress. Grover Norquist knows that the Republican Party is still willing, and not just willing, has to, because of the way that they have created their electoral base, willing to hold the entire country hostage and say, we will not pay the bills that we have already got the proceeds from. We've spent the money. Credit card bill has shown up. We're just not going to pay. That's what he is suggesting. So good luck to Grover on that.
I just can't believe him saying, you know, like, who does this Obama guy think he is?
Right. As opposed to Grover Norquist.
Yeah. Does he have a pledge or something?
He hasn't gotten anybody to sign a pledge. So here's the point, is that the Republican base still remains the Republican base. A public policy poll came out today. 49% of Republican voters nationally say they think the election was stolen for President Obama. And who or what stole this election for President Obama? Why, of course, Acorn. The amazing thing about the belief that Acorn stole the election is that Acorn doesn't exist anymore. That must account for the 3% drop in Republicans who believed the last election was stolen for President Obama by Acorn. Now, to be fair, at least Acorn existed then. Now, of course, it doesn't.
How convenient of Acorn to not exist anymore.
Oh, very suspicious. 25% of Republicans say they would like their states to secede from the Union. 56% want to stay in America. And 19% aren't sure. I get to see how this plays out. The amount of people who are identifying themselves as Republican is, and this is going to come as a shocker, dropping. Because they're looking around and seeing that, boy, this Republican Party is full of complete nut jobs. Grover Norquist, who's so convinced that President Obama doesn't know his place in the universe, is largely unknown nationally. And among voters who are familiar with him, he is generally disliked. Only 23% of voters think it's important for politicians to follow Norquist's tax pledge, 39% who think it's not important, 38% who don't have an opinion. And as much as we talk about those two old coots, Bowles and Simpson, who hate Social Security, in terms of the Bowles-Simpson letter, 23% support it, 16% oppose it, and 60% say they don't know one way or the other. So just give you a sense of what kind of bubble we live in terms of our knowledge of these things. But that is consistent with everything we know about the obsession by the Beltway elite to cut Medicare, to cut Social Security, even though you have upwards of high 60s in the Republican Party, 68%, 66% who don't want Medicare touched. It's even higher for those who don't want Social Security touched. And continuing on with this theme that the Republican base is still living in complete nutso world. You've got the Republican legislators in Georgia talking about, what is it, UN Agenda 21 or something? Giving a two-hour presentation on how the UN is going to take over the country, I think largely based on Glenn Beck's book.
I thought that was also the thing about Obama knows secret mind control technique.
Oh, that's what it is, too. That's part of it.
Oh,
of course.
He uses that.
No, of course. Okay. Uses those secret mind control things. Well, it turns out that may not be the worst thing that President Obama is doing. It's one thing to use secret mind control. But a columnist on the conservative website WorldNet Daily, in a post called "Will Obama Build a Death Star Next?" Not a joke. Not a joke. Joe Kovacs wonders if the White House will respond to a petition on its We the People website calling for construction on a Death Star to begin by 2016. For those of you who are not familiar with the Star Wars movie, the Death Star was built by Darth Vader. And it also turns out that the petition asking the Obama administration to secure resources and funding for the construction by, quote, focusing our defenses and resources into a space superiority platform and a weapon such as a Death Star, the government can spur job creation in the fields of construction, engineering, space exploration, and more, strengthen our national defense. This writer from WorldNet Daily actually writes, so far there's no official response from the White House. I also believe there's been no non-official response from the White House. But there could be one should the petition collect 25,000 signatures by mid-December. Now, just in case you're wondering, right now it's December 5th. Only 800 people have signed the online measure. And one of the names is from Darth V, who apparently lives in Burlington, North Carolina.
I wonder who that could be.
And what this moron from World Nut Daily News or whatever it is doesn't realize, there's a lot of joke petitions on there. But I can guarantee you the percentage of people who read World Net Daily, who believe that, yes, it's possible that President Obama is building a Death Star. He doesn't know his place in the universe. He thinks he's Darth Vader. I would say it's probably in the high 80s.
He needs to build that Death Star so he has a place in the universe.
Indeed.
Wouldn't, though, the Death Star be a good complement to Star Wars and missile defense? I mean, from, like, Republican foreign policy thinking?
Well, yeah, wasn't
like,
that? That's,
I mean, he's the wrong guy to build it.
I think that's what Reagan actually called it, was Star Wars or whatever it was.
Yes, that is what he called it, yeah.
So all of this is to tell you that, you know, and you, we can make the mistake. I don't know what that noise is. I don't know. It's coming from the mic? I don't think so. We can make this mistake of believing that these things simply happen in the darkest netherworlds of the Republican Party. When we talk about what's going on at World Net Daily, when we talk about Grover Norquist, when we talk about Republicans believing that Acorn has stolen the election, it's nice to say that this just exists in this sort of like alternate universe of Republicanism. But just yesterday, the U.S. Senate voted on whether or not we should ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of Disabled People. The measure failed, though it got 61 votes to 38, but you need 66 votes to ratify a treaty like this. All 38 votes came, all 38 votes against ratifying this treaty came from Republican senators. Apparently, they felt that this was an attempt by the UN to maintain some type of sovereignty over this nation, that it would force parents of disabled children to send them to public schools, that it would force America to adopt laws enshrining abortion rights, homosexual rights, and demands that the complete disarmament of all people. And all this was the United States signing on to a treaty which would have affected zero laws in this country because it was completely built upon the Americans with Disabilities Act that was passed in this country 20 some odd years ago. All it would do in ratifying this treaty would make this treaty adopted by the UN and by other countries internationally. It would have helped U.S. businesses, which is why it was supported by the Chamber of Commerce, because it would have required other countries to come up to the standards in which we have set in the way that people with disabilities must be treated. But the Republican Party is so far in Nutsville that 38, 39 senators, 38 Republican senators have bought onto this notion that black helicopters are going to come, force everybody to get mandatory abortions, and that we're all going to be part of this one world agenda for ratifying a treaty that basically says other countries must live up to the standards set in the United States for treating disabled people. So the idea that we have these Republican nut jobs who are just living in one part of the universe and it's not implicating the way our government functions is a pipe dream. The Republicans are controlled by the nuts in their electoral base. And it's why I say they cannot win a national election. Now, these 38 senators, they all come from, I guarantee you, from districts where or states where they won by a decent majority, or they're afraid of being primaried on their right by people who are like, Red Dawn, Wolverines, man. Can't let the UN do this. Pretty soon we're going to be surrounded by blue shirts, blue helmets everywhere. all our police forces will have to wear blue uniforms or something. Wait a second. They already do. All right, we're going to head into the better half of the program. Number 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. As always, folks, did I say that Credo petition we've got online at majority.fm? As always, folks, this is when I say, please become a member of the Majority Report. It is your membership that provides us with 98.9% of our revenue. That and, of course, the huge funding we get from Soros and the UN. That is a... Don't say it. If you can't afford to become a member, but you want access to the second half of the program, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Very much like the first half of the program today. Though we sprinkle in some IMs and some phone calls. Occasionally we do a random rush. Sometimes we talk to the UPS guy if he comes in. That's just a little bit of a taste. Also, other ways of supporting the program, of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Great Christmas gift. Great holiday gift. What am I saying? Can't believe. Just drop the ball.
The war is on, man.
Great Hanukkah gift. I'm giving my family a pound of coffee a night. Myla just likes the pictures on the bags. JustCoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% discount. Buy the Majority Report blend. You can also buy your Amazon crap through our Amazon link. Go to majority.fm. Look to the top of the website. Click support the show. Click on that Amazon link that you see on that page. Bookmark it. Always buy your stuff. If you're going to Amazon, just click that link. It'll take you there. You won't see any difference. Anything you buy there, we get a little kickback. Sign up for our YouTube channel. DonateYourAccount.com/MajorityReport. Majority FM. All sorts of ways you can help the program out. I will be on Joy Behar tomorrow. I'm asking. I'm not telling. And you can IM me at Majority FM. See you on the flip side.